Welcome to Women Mean Business, the new podcast from the Conference for Women. I'm your host, Lisa Bennett, and today we're excited to be talking with Michelle Gadsden-Williams. Michelle is both an award-winning author and award-winning global diversity expert. She's also Accenture North America's Managing Director and Inclusion and Diversity Lead. Her new book, Climb, Taking Every Step with Conviction, Courage, and Calculated Risk to Achieve a Thriving Career and a Successful Life, won the African American Literature Award for Best Self-Help Book. It blends research, advice, personal stories, and always a good thing, humor. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. You know, one of the things I really love about your book is the blending of so much research, great advice, and personal story. Mm. You're very candid about race, about gender, and about your personal life, including marriage, managing lupus, choosing not to have children. Why did you think it important to write this book and be so open about so many topics?
Well, it was always my intention to write a book. The question for me was, when was I going to have the time to do it? And so I took a short hiatus or sabbatical in 2015 to pursue entrepreneurial ventures with my husband. And while I was doing that, I decided to use every Friday as my writing day and to get the process started. So I read Lean In, and I know that you referred to that earlier on in the conversation. I read it a few years ago when it came out, and to be quite candid, as a woman of color, it just did not speak to me because my experience is a little different. And so when I think about my experience, when I think about gender diversity, and when we talk about gender in particular, we can't talk about it in the context of it being a monolith. Women are very different, women of color in particular. And when I say women of color, I mean Black, Asian, Native, Hispanic, anyone who is not Caucasian is a woman of color. And our experiences in life are different, therefore we engage differently, we lead differently, and we succeed differently. And so I really wanted to capture a lot of that in the book. And so the title of the book speaks volumes about my personal career trajectory and my professional journey. And I'm extremely passionate about helping women, especially women of color, climb the corporate ladder. And so my goal was not to focus on academic theories and things like that or statistics like other self-help books. What I wanted to do was to really focus on addressing and dissecting some of the obstacles and barriers and challenges that women have, but offer pragmatic solutions and key tips and tools to ensure that all of these women are fully equipped to tackle today's most pressing workplace issues. So that's essentially why I wrote the book. And so in sum, and I know I'm long-winded, I'd say that there are some individuals who have an easy go of it and who can take the proverbial elevator up to the C-suite, and others, not so much. They're forced to take the stairs with a backpack and no air conditioning. And so no matter how you ascend, there is a journey that we each experience, and it ebbs and flows and twists and turns and all of that. But with every step, you get that much closer to achieving your aspiration, whatever that may be. So there's no smooth ride to the top for any of us.
And you feel a particular responsibility to help others, you know, after your tremendous career, to help others take that ride to the top, don't you? I know you talk about the next generation in the sense of, you know, this isn't just about you. You're trying to bring other folks with you.
Absolutely. And so I'm at probably close to the tail end of my career. And so I get most of my gratification every day by helping the next generation of young women realize their potential, realize what their ambitions are, and using myself as the subject or the protagonist, if you will, for a lot of the things that might happen along the way. So I'm extremely passionate about helping women to rise from wherever they are in whatever profession they're working in.
I want to dive into some of your great advice for women. But before we do that, I just noted that in your acknowledgments, you dedicated this book to your grandmothers. So you know, here you are thinking about the women to come, and your book was dedicated by the women who came before you. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes, and thank you for that. I owe a lot to these women. So it's my maternal and paternal grandmothers, but also my husband's grandmother, who I had the good fortune of getting to know before she passed away a few years ago. And these are women who grew up in a time where, you know, they were pioneers. You know, these were women who dedicated their entire lives to service and to doing more for others and putting themselves last, raising a family, but also, you know, keeping at the forefront of themselves, you know, keeping themselves first in terms of what they wanted to do and the impact that they wanted to have in this life. So I dedicated my book to these women who really have paved the way for me and a number of women who are aspiring to do similar kinds of things in our lives.
Thank you. So it's interesting how, you know, your metaphor of the climb up the ladder, we can also see ourselves generationally that, right, that way. So let's jump into what some of the obstacles and solutions are for women of color. You talk about not just the glass ceiling, but the concrete ceiling. What's going on? What do you want people to understand?
Well, women in general, you know, just the barriers and challenges that we have are certainly there in terms of the lack of representation at the top of the house. You know, currently there's only, to your point, 1 in 5 C-suite leaders that is a woman. And when you talk about women of color, there's 1 in 25 women who are in the C-suite. So you can't be what you can't see, in other words. Mm-hmm. So I just think that there's just not enough critical mass of women sitting at the top of the house in any organization. In addition to that, what I would say is that women are over-mentored and under-sponsored. And let's talk about that for a second, because I think many of us have mentors who can show us the lay of the land, help us to navigate, you know, show us the way and all of those kinds of things. But sponsorship, which is taking it one step further, is what women really need. And sponsorship programs, in my view, you know, this is what's going to help women of color advance. And, you know, these are powerful advocates and champions and individuals who have a seat at the table where the decisions are being made. And so they can champion and advocate and put your name in the hat to be considered for these opportunities. So that's what you want. Someone who has that kind of power, someone who's willing to put their professional and personal collateral on the table for you. And I'm a sports enthusiast, so I'm going to use a sports analogy. So about your sponsor as being your personal trainer and your mentor is your personal trainer and your sponsor as your sports agent. So your trainer is helping flex those muscles to get where you want to be so you can see the results at a later point in time. Your agent, so to speak, is helping you to position you the right way, helping you to advance to that next level. So that's the difference that I see. And that's where, you know, women of color, those are some of the support systems that we need. In addition to that, what I would also say is that women in general have just a lack of access and visibility to some of the networks needed to get to that next level. And when you overlay being an ethnic minority on top of it, and we call that intersectionality, it's even compounded even more. You really don't have access to these networks and support systems because there's the old boy network that's there, and it's hard to permeate through a lot of that. So I'd say this notion of intersectionality, which if I can define that for a moment, it's when two dimensions of diversity overlap and cause complexity in terms of your life experience. So for our example, it would be the gender piece and the ethnicity piece. So women of color, their experiences are that much more complex than majority women or Caucasian women as a result of their life experience.
Right. So you mentioned, you know, you can't be what you can't see. So would you say that the lack of visibility then at the top is the primary obstacle?
I'd say lack of visibility is a primary obstacle. But again, going back to these, you know, having access to these networks, these informal networks that happen, you know, either after work, on the weekends, when we're just not there, on the golf course, other venues. So we're just not invited to a lot of these venues, or they're just not appropriate for us to be there, either at the bar, after our drinks, or whatever the case is. We choose sometimes not to be a part of that, and rightfully so. So I think it's a lot. It's the representation or the lack thereof at the top. It's the visibility to the leadership at the top, but also lack of access and exposure to the networks that are going to support the advancement of women.
Right. And that's true for all women in a more complex way, as you're saying, for women of color.
Absolutely.
Right. So what do you advise women do to try to negotiate that?
Well, I think we have to be crystal clear in terms of, so what is it that we want out of our career, and ask for what it is that we want, and be extremely articulate about the things that we want for ourselves, the positions that we want, and the things that we don't want. Because the last thing you want to have happen is to have someone make assumptions about your career for you, just by not knowing what it is that you do or don't want to do in terms of your career. So I think that's the first thing. We just need to be very vocal, very crisp and articulate in terms of asking for what we want. And then I think that there's no real place, in my view, for self-doubt. Ask for feedback where possible. You know, sometimes we as women, we don't always get the honest, candid feedback that we rightfully deserve. And so we keep going in these roles, doing the things that we do, not understanding that there are some things that we can do better. And that's because no one tells us, no one holds up that mirror and shows us what we need to do differently. So I think we just need to ask for feedback and ask for the help that we need. And then the other thing I would say is, and I call this flying stealth or below the radar, that is not enough. Just keeping your head down and doing the work, that's not enough. We have to raise our hands and sign up for the difficult assignments, the difficult projects, the more visible stretch assignments and so forth. Otherwise, we're going to get lost in the fray. So I think these are some of the things that I would suggest we as women do in order to have more visibility, asking for what we want in terms of our careers, our pay and negotiating pay, and again, applying stealth and not being, differentiating ourselves from the masses, not being mixed in with everyone else and getting lost.
So when, you know, you say in your book that you were, I think, a born fighter. And your mom said at some point that, you know, your mouth might get you in trouble.
Right? Yes.
So you seem like somebody who's very confident, you know, whether you've worked on that or it happened naturally. But there are a lot of women in the workplace that have insecurity about asking for feedback or asking for help. They're afraid it's going to show, you know, a sign of weakness or something. What do you say to them?
You know, I like everyone else, there are days when I feel more confident than others. And I don't know if I've always been as confident today as I was in the earlier part of my career. I think that has come with age and experience and you know, just some situations where I've had no choice but to speak up for myself. So my advice is to find your voice. You know, if you're not going to advocate for yourself, who is? And you have to be your own champion and advocate, especially when it comes to your career. So it's not a matter of what you say, but how you say it. So practice that. We all have mentors and others that we might speak to, colleagues and so forth, your partners or spouses or whomever. You know, practice having that conversation. Practice asking for what it is that you want. And it becomes easier the more in which you rehearse it. So that's what I've done over the years.
Right. No, that's great, great advice. And I know this is something, you know, developed over time, but is there anything that comes to mind to you as a you know, a story or an experience that was pivotal for you in getting to that point of finding your voice?
Yes. I would say, oh my goodness, I have so many examples to share, but I'll share this one. It has taken me the diagnosis of a chronic illness and the mere fact that I, at some points in time, chose my career over the more important things that I was trying to prioritize in my life in order to pursue my career and to do well at it. So in some cases, I have, you know, sacrificed my health, in some instances, my marriage, in order to pursue an executive career. And I spent a good portion of time focusing on my wellness and my relationship with my husband and trying to get all of that back. And let me give you an example of what I mean by that. A few years ago, I was traveling to Switzerland on business when I was working in the pharma industry, and I was on a flight and I wasn't feeling well, and I hadn't been feeling well for quite some time, but I was, you know, just excusing some of my symptoms away. I was, you know, having chronic headaches, unexplained fevers, swelling and some other things. And I was, you know, making excuses. Well, I am getting older and I'm over 40. And and so I was making excuses in terms of why I wasn't making it to the doctor. Well, long story short, I almost lost my life on a couple of occasions as a result of my negligence and not putting my health first. And I was really trying to prove to the leadership that I could do the job that they've put me in this position to do, that I would do anything and everything to prove that prove to these senior leaders that I was worthy of this role, and I was going to go above and beyond to get it done. And in hindsight, I was putting not only myself at risk, but my life at risk by doing things like that. And so the lesson there is, you know, put your health first. You can't be all things to all people if you're not well. And so now I put my health is paramount to me, and I put it in front of everything. One of the other lessons that I had to learn was my husband is my biggest supporter, and he and I have been married for many, many years. And here is a person who he sacrificed everything for me. When we moved to Switzerland in 2006, he retired from a 22-year distinguished career at AT&T so that I could realize the dream. And I found it quite challenging to balance both career and being a wife. And so I was succeeding professionally, but failing in other aspects of my life. And so managing my health and being a wife were the biggest challenges that I was encountering. And so I remember my husband was surprising me with a luxurious vacation to Monaco, and we were both excited to go and to celebrate our anniversary. And while I was on the trip, I made the mistake of bringing my BlackBerry with me. And it was the peak time at work, and I was digging into my work and doing the work, and I was on my BlackBerry constantly. And finally, David, my husband, looked at me and said, "Are you on vacation with me, or are you planning to work the entire time?" Mm-hmm. And I looked at the disappointment in his eyes. And it was from that point that I decided that my husband comes first before my career. You know, here's a person who sacrificed everything for me, and the least I could do was to be present and to give him my undivided attention. So since then, I've decided to focus on what really matters to me most, and that is my health and my life partner, my husband. And I'm very vocal about things.
It's fascinating that in, you know, coming to terms with the importance of both of those things, it seems connected to you finding your voice and your confidence in the workplace as well, right? It's like aligning your priorities.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, finding your fearless self, for me, it meant really taking a step back and digging deep into who I was, digging deep into my soul to reveal all the things that were shaping me as an individual. And the diagnosis of that chronic illness helped me define my fearless self, because I fear my illness more than anything else at this point. So I am very candid and very vocal about women and self-care and how important that is.
You had a line in your book about to hell with the bold-faced lie of having it all. that comes to mind here.
Yes. I just have not been able to get that formula right. So if someone has to the secret sauce, I'm all ears. I just haven't been able to figure it out. I am a true believer that women cannot have it all. And either I am doing well in my professional life and failing in some aspects of my personal life, or vice versa. So I just don't think that it's possible. So I just think I take one moment at a time, one day at a time, one act at a time, one lesson at a time. That's the best that I can do.
There are so many things I want to talk to you about. I just so appreciate your honesty. Something I'd love to go back to on a kind of practical advice front here. You mentioned early on about the importance of having not only a mentor but a sponsor.
Yes.
And so you have this team of on your side as you go along, and I think you believe in also potentially having more than one mentor at a time, and that it doesn't have to be somebody of the same race or gender, or, maybe it's somebody way beyond where one is, at a career level. I'm stumbling and getting around to being so struck by the story of you being a junior person earlier in your career and then going and asking no less than the CEO to be your mentor.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yes. That was a bold move, and that was many years ago. I remember it like it was yesterday. And again, it goes back to being very clear about what it is that you want. And I remember asking the then CEO, I just watched him from a distance, and he just had, his leadership was legendary, and he just had that it factor. And he had personality, he had intellectual horsepower, he had he just had the full package. And I wanted some semblance of that. And there were just some things in my mind that I was missing. And so I just felt that I could learn a lot from this individual. And so I remember going to the head of HR at the time, who was serving as my mentor, and saying, I really would like to have a business leader as my mentor / sponsor. Can you help me do that? And she said, absolutely. Who are you interested in speaking to about that? And I said, Paulo Costa, who at the time was the CEO of Novartis Pharma. And she said, really? And I said, yes. And she said, she asked the question, why? And I gave her all the reasons why I thought he was absolutely the right person for me. He knew of my skills and talents from a distance, so I wasn't foreign to him. But I knew in my mind that there could be this reverse mentoring opportunity that could happen. He could learn a lot from me as much as I could learn from him. So she was convinced that that was the right thing to do. She spoke to him on my behalf, and then I talked to him about the opportunity, and he said yes. And in my mind, it was, what's the worst thing that could happen is that they know. So I gave him every reason to say yes. My performance was where it needed to be. I was doing incredible things in the organization at the time. I was a sponge trying to soak it all up, and fairly young in my career at the time. And he was flattered by the fact that I took the time to learn about his background, his family, and everything else, and to come to him with a proposal about why he was the best person that would mentor me. And to this day, Paulo Costa is still someone that I call on and keep in touch with. So it's not just about selecting a mentor. It's about building, maintaining, and sustaining these relationships over time. So,
And do you think that, sorry.
I was going to say, I would be remiss if I didn't say that I've benefited greatly from my mentor and sponsor relationships over the years.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that making a bold move is critical for women and women of color in particular?
I'd say taking a calculated risk is worth it. Mm-hmm. You know, I can be risk averse as well. Let's not get that twisted. I personally think that scare the heck out of me. But in my mind, it's what's the worst that can happen? You know, my view is that you go into the sandstorm, just put on a pair of goggles. What's the worst?
I'm just seeing that image in my head. That's great. So I just, before we wrap up, I want to ask you about two things. You know, one is to kind of bring this full circle about race and gender, and, you know, in the spirit of being bold and candid, you know, you've said that we need to find ways to have tough conversations, yes, about these topics without throwing ourselves under the bus, mm-hmm, and that white women and women of color need to coexist better.
Yes.
How do we do that?
I just think that people are unaware, or there's like a foreign entity or the unknown, sometimes we tend to put up walls and or barriers. And we do that in our relationships. And I do that in terms of my relationships. When I'm not familiar with a person, I'm a little cautious about who I might interact with or what I say, or am I divulging too much information? So I just think that the more in which we can get to know each other on an intimate level, on a visceral level, that fear of the unknown, that unfamiliarity goes away over time. And mm-hmm, so I think the more in which we can spend time with each other and build trust and understanding and awareness that my experience is a little bit different than yours, and here's how. And there needs to be some acknowledgement about that. I think that is what's going to help foster a closer and more symbiotic relationship between women in general, no matter who. Mm-hmm. And I have sister friends, as I call them, from all different walks of life. And we all talk about this. You know, we are all walking the same walk. It's just some of us have a different life experience. And sometimes the burdens of society we carry into the workplace with us. And we, right, as a result of some of those things, we engage with people differently. We lead a little bit differently. And we succeed differently as a result of all of it. So I just think that we just need to support each other more and be open to having those conversations about our differences, but also talk about the similarities, because we all share that. We all share a lot of the same challenges and barriers as well.
Indeed. Are you hopeful we're headed in the right direction?
I am. You know, I'm not going to be Pollyanna about it. We certainly have some way to go in terms of equity and parity and fairness. And when we think about things like pay equity and all those kinds of things, oh yes, we certainly have a lot of work to do. But I'm hopeful that we will get there. Yes, today is a lot better for a lot of us than it was yesterday. And so that's my position. I'm just an optimistic kind of a person. And so I think that the more in which we can serve as advocates and champions and guard and protect each other, the better off we all are.
Michelle, thank you so much for sharing your time, insights, and good humor with us. And thank you, listeners. Women Mean Business will be back next month with top-rated Conference for Women speaker Courtney Carver on how to experience less stress and more fulfillment in work life and home life.